Good afternoon, everybody. I think it was wise to move indoors because it really is very hot today. Because of the limited nature of the topics that I can do in sort of one session, I normally would do most things I would teach would be in two or three sessions. I've chosen a couple of things which I think were really important. Last week, I spoke about prejudice in the Jewish community and how we have to be so careful about what we say. This week I'm talking about something which, although I'm coming at it from an education point of view, it does have ramifications in a wider scope. Just before coming to camp, I now live in South Jersey, and there was a very shocking news item which was repeating itself for a couple of days, that a number of couples, men, husband and wife, were arrested in a very religious community in Lakewood for issues of having, the only word I can use is taken without permission. They're talking about literally millions of dollars of support, things that were done which were really quite shocking. And again, a lot of people were trying to make excuses and everything else about it. It's an ongoing investigation. At the moment, I think there are 12 couples under arrest, and they could go to jail for quite a long time. The investigation is ongoing, and the big problem is, and then people don't really understand this, if one knows the Lakewood community and how it's developed. On the one hand, there is this very beautiful Torah community which exists down there, but on the other hand, there are people who seem to have to bring with them a certain, let's use it, standard of living, from, if they're coming from New York or wherever, transport it down into the Lakewood area and sort of expanding out into other towns. And the IRS or wherever it is, you know, look at the person claiming benefits living in a million-dollar house and saying, you know, this doesn't make sense. And unfortunately, there's a lot which seems to be going on there. I'm not party to, you know, the sort of the actual details, but in general terms, I really want to talk about the issue of cheating and honesty. But as I said, I'm not going to go with this subject from the point of view, let's call it a business. I'm looking at it in terms of education. And what happened a number of years ago is something that really made a lot of people sit up. There is a yeshiva in North Jersey, the Frisch School, I think it was, which is very well known. And they got themselves into the news because what happened was, this is a number of years ago, that the students were found to be cheating on their SATs. What happened was, this was when texting really got going, but I think the students were more into it than the teachers. Nowadays everybody sends these texts to everybody else, but in those days what happened was that people would make a bathroom break, right, which is these students would go out and text the answer to a certain question to another student who is, you know, got his smartphone or whatever it was in front of him. It didn't have to be a smartphone. One of these flip phones, you could do it as well. And this got found out. And it got found out by the SAT people. The people came, and it was really quite a serious problem. And again, what has happened since then, which is very interesting, is that in schools, for instance, where I teach at YU, every time I give an exam, that's twice a year, I have to read to the students a paragraph which says that if anyone is caught cheating, if anyone is caught doing something like that, there is a zero tolerance. That means that if a person, it's not even a question of getting warned, as soon as you're seen to be cheating, you are excluded from the exam and with very likely not to graduate from the course. Certainly not to get the credit for that particular course. It goes even further than that. I had a case which I never had before, and it was very upsetting to me because I felt sorry in a way for the student. I didn't feel totally sorry, but a student who did what is called plagiarizing. And plagiarizing is, again, another problem in universities, which, because today everything is so accessible with the internet, you know, you can get so much stuff, students are inclined to say, the teacher will never know that this is actually not my words, but the words of another writer.
Shakespeare
would be obvious to be easy to find out. What I had was an essay which was came in very late on a subject in the book of Yeshua, and it was taken word for word from a book that I actually had at home, written by a rabbi in Israel, a young rabbi who wrote a book on the book of Yoshua, came out a number of years ago. And the student did not remotely think that I would be, you know, aware of the fact this was not her work. And it was very serious. I put it to the administration. I think they eventually dealt with it, and I don't quite remember what exactly happened, but there's no question about it. There seems to be, and again, it's not in the majority. Thank God the majority of our kids, the majority of students, you know, understand that they're in college, that they're there to gain a certain education, and when it comes to exams, I always tell them this is the necessary evil. You've got to do it. All right? You know, I'm here particularly when I teach Torah. I want you to enjoy the Torah lesson. But in order to give you a grade, you've got to do an exam, and you have to do research, and you have to do all this stuff that students have always had to do. But now there is this kind of sense, or at least in my perception amongst some of the students, that because they feel that they are more savvy sometimes than the teacher, that they can get away with stuff. And, you know, kids always want to get away with something, but this is more serious. You know, this is something where people will, unfortunately, try and get away with things. If they try and do it in college and succeed, then what sort of mensch, what sort of person have we created? And this is really what I want to talk about a little bit, and talk about some of the sources, because this is, again, as I said, coming at the whole problem from a different angle, but I think it's still really important for us as the role models, because everyone sitting in this room is a role model to your grandchildren or to friends or to, you know, children of people in your community, whatever it may be. And I think we can all get this message across. I tell you what the issue is. Nowadays, everyone seems to be judging people by achievement, right? You know, what degree have you got? What master's? What PhD? Okay, and of course, you know, now when you apply for a job, all the stuff that you have to present, and it's all seemingly more about what you've achieved than, you know, the person themselves. You can be actually, you know, on paper, you can seem a lot bigger, a lot more impressive than you were or than you are. And, of course, that sometimes does create a problem when it comes to achievement, which is gained by dishonesty. We know this in sports. I can never get over this story of the cyclist, Lance Armstrong, who you may have heard of. He won the Tour de France and was eventually found that he cheated. He took drugs, which gave him extra, you know, sort of cycling power, whatever he did, and he was cheating. And after years, they stripped him of all of his achievements, right? He was the one. And of course, what had happened, originally he'd been treated very, very positively by the media because he'd gone through some sort of cancer scare and recovered, and people thought him a great hero. And in the end of the day, you found out that he was a cheat. And of course, you know, there's no question that in my mind, a lot of issues, particularly in Israel, right, revolve around a lot of disappointment about people who became role models. I shall never, ever forget the shiur that I went to. This is, again, a different approach, but a similar problem, of a very wonderful rabbi who gave shiurim. He was probably going to be the next chief rabbi, a guy called Moti Alon, who, for reasons to this day is so unclear to me, had a real social problem. And the social problem was that he did not, did not behave appropriately with young boys in his class, in camp or whatever it may be. And he was told, he was warned that you have to put this into some sort of control, and if not, and he was going to be the chief rabbi of Israel, there's no question in my mind. And he couldn't control it. He was sent out of Jerusalem. He was told to go live in the north of Israel. And they left him alone for a bit. All of a sudden, new reports of problems started coming up. And it goes beyond the person. It becomes such a disappointment. Because our expectation of achievement, our expectation of a high standard, when it's not achieved or when it's compromised, is something which is very difficult. And again, as we know, there is in schools, going back to the educational point of view, the peer pressure. There's a tremendous sense of kids who say, well, you know what? You know, at the end of the day, everybody is doing the same thing. I can get away with it because so-and-so got away with it. You know, people they sort of justify it to the point where they won't want to say so-and-so is not following the rules. Sometimes the parents send the wrong message. And this, again, is very, very difficult. What do I mean? You know, when you see a parent, for instance, trying to, I use the Yiddish word, finagle a ticket, or finagle something, you know, like a police ticket, or they try and do something, you know, they have a conversation with the children over here about how they got away with a certain a certain twist, which managed to save them lots of money in terms of whatever they owed the government or whatever it may be. These are messages which are getting through into the lives of the children, which are creating a big problem. And I know that there are pressures today. A lot of people in Lakewood were talking about how incredibly expensive it is to live as a religious Jew in the 21st century. Fine. But I'm sorry, if you are presenting yourself as a religious person and then justifying taking money without, as I would call it, I don't know if you use in this country, under false pretenses, you're taking money without having the reason for taking it, it doesn't matter who you are, that is not acceptable, that is unacceptable, and as a religious person, even more so. And I just want to share some of the Jewish views about this, because it's kind of obvious, but we don't talk about this enough. There is a law in the Torah, which is quoted here, and Maimonides quotes it, and he says, very simply, Asur l'ramot et b'nei adam, mekach u'memkeh, you can't cheat in business. Doesn't matter who it is. O lignov et da'atam, and that's interesting, not even cheating, taking their money under false pretenses, but even what is called genevat da'at, which means stealing their mind, stealing their thoughts, making them think they're getting something which is not the real deal. He explains, doesn't matter whether it's a non-Jew or a Jew, and he puts the non-Jew first. You know, cheating the goyim seems to be perfectly allowed. Cheating the Jews, not so much. This seems to be a mentality, unfortunately, which we hear of again and again. Unacceptable. Not only unacceptable, it's against the halacha. We can see that. And he says, he knows that he's selling an inferior product. And he doesn't tell anybody. It's a product which, you know, in the course of time, like a kid's toy or something, and sometimes people are selling stuff which is absolutely dangerous, and they know it, and they don't say anything. And according to Jewish law, that is called geneva dat. You're not only cheating the person in business, but you're cheating them in the perception that they have, in the idea that they have of what you have sold them. And the Gemara says something which is so frightening. It says, Shiva ganavim, there are seven levels of cheating, of stealing. And the worst, the rishon, the first one, which is the worst, shebekulam gonev data briyot. You make people think something which is not the case. You steal their minds. And in the case of a child cheating in school, whose mind has been stolen? The teacher. The teacher thinks that there's a high grade. All right, and consequently, you know, the teacher thinks that this child is the best thing since, you know, whatever A-grade student you had last semester. It's not true. The school suffers because obviously in order to create that particular impression when they go to be graded or whatever the word is, you know, they get visited by different authorities and they claim that they have so-and-so number of A students. And it turns out that a lot of them were cheating. That brings the reputation of the school completely down. There are other students, unfortunately, who could have the place of this child who is cheating. If this young man or woman are cheating and they're getting away with it, then they are denying another person. That's also stealing from the other person their place in the school. The parents, I don't even want to talk about tuitions, because tuition is something which is a much bigger issue beyond this. But there's no question about it that parents struggle like mad to send their kids to Jewish education today. I'm talking particularly about Jewish education. And if a child is under that sort of pressure, and unfortunately this is this is one of the loopholes, I think, in the discussion, where children do feel under pressure. They know how much the parent struggles to get the child through yeshiva day school, whatever it may be. And sometimes they feel that, you know, in order to make the parent feel it's justified, the money they've spent, they go and try and get a better grade, but not in the right way. And that, again, is a problem. There also, the student himself, in the end of the day, if this is not nipped in the bud, when a child is very young, and the child grows up to be a young man, a young woman, who thinks they can get away with things, oiva voilon, and then we have a society of ganovim and I don't want to say, next week's Haftarah, Chevrat Ganavim. Isaiah called the Jewish society of his day a bunch of thieves. That's what he called them. Imagine in Jerusalem. And they had the temple and they had everything, and he still uses the word Chevrat Ganavim. You can imagine what was going on in those days. And the prophet said it. And he was very, obviously was very critical of his world. So, in terms of what this represents, the trouble that this represents, I think it's all understood. What I wanted to clarify also is, what do we try and achieve in Torah study? I have this discussion more or less every semester with students. I say, look, when you come to college, there are going to be a number of major changes. Change number one is, this is not Israel. This is Manhattan, right? A lot noisier than Jerusalem. But more to the point, it's a situation where you're coming into an academic society where there are certain demands which you didn't have when you were studying Torah in whatever school it was in Jerusalem, or maybe in Brooklyn, or whatever it was. When they come into an academic forum like a college, Torah or Yeshiva University, whatever it may be, their whole mindset really has to change. It has to focus on that. And that's, again, kind of interesting. On the other hand, I say to them, look, what I'm trying to do, as I said, I try to make the Torah study as authentic as it possibly can be. And that, again, is very challenging, because a lot of the students, you know, sort of take the point of college, and sometimes they don't quite know where the appropriate question should be, and what to ask, what not to ask, what to say, what not to say. And I try to get to guide them in the sense that what we are studying ideally should be lishma. This is the word I use. Lishma means for the sake of study. And there's a wonderful statement in the Talmud. Again, I'll read it to you. It's Brachot. Page 17, it says, Reshit Chochma Yirat Hashem, the verse that we all know. We say it when we get up every day. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of God, says the Talmud, Shekol Sechel Tov L'chol Oseim, and it brings good knowledge or understanding to all those who perform the mitzvot. What does it mean? Lo'osim lo nemal lo'oseim lo'osim lishma. And the rabbis say this is people who do things for the sake of the mitzvah. Shalola osim shalolishma. But if you don't do it for the sake of the mitzvah, then it's not so positive. Now again, this is a very high level of achievement. To do something lishma is very important, very difficult, I've got to add. But at the same time, it's something that we daven for. We say it every day. We ask God to be able to study the Torah for the sake of studying the Torah. Or there's a statement, again, I've got a whole bunch of quotes which I'm not even going to go through. But there's no question about it. Torah, when it's studied properly, is very inspiring. It's very uplifting. It can be very challenging. And what I do enjoy so much in my teaching particularly is to make it very real. All right? When you sit in a class and I do this, and I probably shouldn't do it. My wife always criticizes me for doing it. But I say to the girls, after learning about King David, for about a month, yeah, you know, we sort of start off talking about him and a bit about his background and where he came from and the fact that, you know, he was this kind of eclectic sort of guy, and not just the sort of traditional yeshiva approach, but a bit of a wider approach. My question to the students after a month or so is that, would you ever date such a person? Would you go out with him? And, you know, that becomes a real question, because you found out what he's like, and all of a sudden, you know, they ask themselves, not so sure. You know, he's the sort of guy which is, he's very emotional. I always remind them that when they bring the bill after the meal, he'll probably start crying. You know, he's that sort of guy. He'll have tears in his eyes. Very interesting discussion that produces. Because what it means is, instead of the person being so far removed from their lives, I try and make it relevant to their existence. Now again, with all due respect, obviously David HaMelech is such an ish kodesh, he's such a holy man, he's up there in the cloud. But he was also a human being. He was also a mensch. He also lived on this world. And in order to really get to the heart of who the person is, we have to dig a bit. And we have to understand that he wasn't without faults, and he wasn't without limitations. And all of that makes the whole thing real. It becomes what they call lishma. I really feel that's the way to do it. It's my own approach to the whole thing, but I find very often that it works. I do have a quote here which is absolutely amazing. Maimonides lived 900 years ago. And he understood sociology better than all the sociologists put together. What did Maimonides say about the power of the peer group? Listen to this. He says this in the laws of what is called Hichot Deot, the knowledge of God, the knowledge of wisdom. And he says like this, Derech Briyoto Shel Adam. Listen to this, unbelievable. He says a person has been created, Liyot Nimshach B'deotav V'Ma'asav Achar Re'av V'Chaveiro. You're always led in your ideas and in your actions by your friends and by your neighbors. Right? Where you live can affect the way that you behave. I always remember when I moved to Israel, one of my dreams, I guess, was to live in a religious neighborhood. This was 1980. And we left the absorption center and we went to live in a place called Sanhedrin Mocheved. Some of you may know it. And it was so intensely religious, but unfortunately, I loved the Shabbos and the fact that the road was closed and it was a very Shabbos atmosphere, but people were living very much on top of each other. And there were negative kind of behaviors which were there, which, you know, you couldn't do anything without somebody commenting either positive or negative about what you were doing. And that was something which, to us, we just couldn't handle it. And the real kicker came on the 9 days, which we're coming up to next week, when in the building that the person running the hot water in the hot water system, it was a central system, he switched off the hot water. 50 young children in the building. And when we complained to him and said, Adoni, you switched off the hot water, he looked as if we were crazy. He says, but it's the 9 days, you're not supposed to use hot water. But we said, but 50 children in the building need to bathe in hot water. You know, switch on the dud, he says, you've got a boiler, you've got electric, which was very expensive. It was crazy. And we just couldn't hack it. You know, the whole idea of the peer pressure and the sense of intense sort of influence around you is something which Maimonides recognized. And what does he say? He says like this, he says, in order to lefichach, he says, therefore, tzarech adam lehitchaber letzadikim, he says, you should live in a neighborhood, try and find the good guys, the righteous guys, but v'leshev, and dwell amongst them. Eitzel ha-chachamim, people who are smart. Doesn't use the word frum, by the way. Doesn't say you should go and live in a frum neighborhood. He says, find the people who are living amongst you who are good examples, good people. Tamit, k'dei she'yilmod ma'asem, so you can learn from their actions. And it's interesting the way he puts it. V'yidracheg min ha-sha'im, he says, don't associate yourselves with bad people. And these could be bad people dressed up in religious garb. Doesn't matter, because they may still be bad people. And he says, Olchim b'choshek, those are the ones who go in the darkness, k'dei shelo yilmod ma'asem, that you don't learn from their deeds. It's an unbelievable comment. And Maimonides is absolutely talking about something which they write courses about this today. Peer pressure in the world, in the community where you live, places where you decide to live, and how careful one has to be in terms of the effect of what's going on around you and the way that you conduct yourself. I don't really want to go into this because there's a lot to say about this, but I just want to keep it very, very simple. If a person feels, for instance, that a friendship is in danger, if you don't do the same schwindel that the other person does, he does a certain trick with his taxes and you know about it, and he says, why don't you do this? So easy. And what must have happened in Lakewood, New Jersey, you know, it's so easy to get money from the government. Just put in this form and this disability claim or whatever it was, and you'll get the money. And in that situation, the question is, so you don't behave like your neighbor. You say, but that's dishonest. It's not right. You'll lose a friendship. Maybe people don't want to lose friendships. Says the Mishnah in Avot. We know. We all know it. Pirkei Avot. Kol ha'ava tluya b'davar. If a friendship depends on an external situation, then batel davar, batel ha'ava. When that goes away, the love goes away. The friendship is not a friendship. If you are friends because you are partners in crime, that's not a great friendship to have. It's really not the way to go. The test of true friendship, this is again, I think, is so important with, particularly with young people, is to let them understand that it's about integrity. What my Rav in London always used to call, in Yiddish, Ehrlichkeit. Teaching the world honesty, how to conduct yourself in an Ehrlich way. So many people, I mean, I don't have to talk about Mr. Madoff and all the issues that came about because of him, and still are coming about because of him. Every so often, it just amazes me, number one, how many TV shows they're being made about that particular story. I think another one just came out a few months ago. It's getting, the actors are getting more, you know, the ones playing Bernie Madoff are now getting more and more well known. I think it was Robert De Niro this time. I mean, I don't know who it was last time. But that's kind of scary because, again, you know, someone of that prominence and what he achieved, or the bad thing that he did and the lifestyle that he thought, Magielo, he thought that he deserved, and all the thoughts, where did all of that corruptness come from? One can only speculate, and a lot of people haven't gone into that. How did he believe that running a scheme that he ran, cheating not just individuals, that's one level of it, but cheating stockers, cheating charities, Hadassah, $19 million, University, over $100 million. I mean, it's like most outrageous sums of money that were just taken and squandered or whatever, you know, to take from Peter to pay Paul. You know, this is the way that the schemes were run. It's beyond belief. And what did he gain out of it? He's gained 150 years in jail. His wife is, you know, running around incognito somewhere in Florida, I understand. And his kids, they've died. I think both of them. And the son committed suicide. You know, what comes out of that? Absolutely, on the contrary, what comes out of it is so shocking. So again, all of this in terms of educational lessons, this is really important. I want to just give a little bit more of background because the challenge for Jewish schools is still a very great challenge. A lot of schools, and this is something that I really am excited about, and I think the yeshivot, particularly the very right-wing yeshivot that one finds the schools in Brooklyn and in Lakewood and other places, which are particularly good in their, what they call their chesed program. The chesed program, but it's also very, it's good in all schools. All Jewish schools do this, and it's really something special. I have to say, when I was 15 or 16 years old in London, in a non-Jewish school, growing up there, in a very different environment to the way my kids and grandchildren are growing up today, we also had what I call a chesed program, right? We visited an old lady once a week, and it was something that we took her some food, and we used to sort of sit with her and whatever. And again, you know, it was understood that this creates a certain style of character. And this was not necessarily put forward as a Jewish idea. It was put forward as character building. In order to really become someone who's positive in the society around you, not just to take from that society, but to give. And that's something which I think is very, very important. Again, in terms of cheating, there has to be a school policy. The school policy is, without question, has to be zero tolerance. And I'm afraid to ask this question today because, again, I still hear, when I talk to people coming from different communities, it goes on, you know what, you know, we sort of not just turn a blind eye. Sometimes the principal will know about it, sometimes he doesn't know about it. It's unacceptable today. We can't. We cannot afford to have those schools being singled out again for this particular problem. And it's something which in London, I don't think this was the issue per se, but there were three Hasidic schools in London that had just been closed. They were closed by the government. And part of the problem there was, in fact, that their policies were not very clear on certain subjects that they were teaching, but also that they didn't have in place these types of zero tolerance when it comes to cheating. Now, again, a lot of the yeshivas, and this is a problem which a lot of the young men who go to the full-time yeshiva studies have, is that when you go to full-time yeshiva study, you go on to do, let's say, smicha. And in Israel, the smicha exam is a very intense exam. I think you study 4 or 5 years, and it's hundreds of questions on the exam. That in itself creates a certain amount of requirement to be, as it were, a bit more methodical and a bit more focused in what you're learning. The yeshiva generally will say, come and learn for a year, and then another year, and another year. You know, 20 years goes by, and the guy's in kola, what has he really achieved? And I'm a great believer, not only in having these high standards, but in focusing the learning. And again, a little story. I met a friend. I was lining up in London to go to Israel. It's a few years ago. And I bumped into an old chava of mine who was in the yeshiva with me 40 years ago. And I'm looking at him, I'm saying, Ramesh, I haven't seen you for 40 years. What have you been doing for the last 40 years? I told him what I do, and I'm teaching, whatever. He said to me he's been learning in the Mir. He's been learning in the yeshiva for 40 years. And I'm looking at him, my eyes popped out. And I said, Ramesh, what have you been doing in the yeshiva? Well, I learn in the mornings, and I do a bit of work in the afternoon, I come back in the evening. I said, I only had one question for him. Ramesh, where's your sefer? Where is your contribution to the Jewish world? Where is your book of guidance for, not only for you and for people around you, but for the next generation? And of course, that killed the conversation dead. He didn't want to hear that. Interestingly, a guy in my shul in Fairlawn, before I moved, I had the same conversation because his son-in-law was learning in Merkaz Arab, which is the very Zionistic yeshiva in Jerusalem. And before we moved, he came to me, the father-in-law, and he presented me with a sefer, and I said, what is this book? He said, this is my son-in-law's book. He actually got the point. You know, I spoke about this a number of times, and he got the point. He wrote a book. And the book was published, and there it is. And I said, wow. You know, if I've got any part of this book, I'd be very happy. But even if I don't, this is phenomenal. Because that's what it's got to be about. It's got to be about focusing. I think we don't today have the luxury of having this kind of generic learning program without some sort of focus, without some sort of challenge, because again, otherwise people will just sit back and, for want of a better word, you see, and I hate to say this, so many of the yeshiva boys in Israel, who I still believe the army would be the best place for them, even for a short period of time, standing on the street corners during the vacation time, smoking on the street corners, and they think that, you know, the government is wrong trying to force them to go to the army. And I can't, again, understand either their mentality, they're taking money from the Israeli government but not giving back, and the mentality of the parents, who declares some sort of fast day as soon as the government tries to do something about it. Immediately, all the guys go out in the streets and they start demonstrating. It's unbelievable. I don't know. That's maybe my own personal feeling. Yes? It's a lot. It's both sides, but I think the cure should come from above, from the administrators. That they've got to set a policy which is zero tolerance, be it about cheating, be it about using money which is not going to be used properly, whatever it may be, right? And then when that policy is in place, the kids, the students, I mean, even a 21-year-old studying in whatever yeshiva in Jerusalem, you know, what sort of life experience has he really had? And of course, what are they going to live on? And the guy who collected in my shul a few months ago makes an announcement. He's 21, getting married, and his grandfather was in Kolan, and his father's in Kolan. And of course, the community has to support him. And we're saying to him, but what do you plan to do with your life? Oh, I'm always going to learn. So, you know, it didn't sound authentic, it didn't sound genuine. And when we said to him, challenged him and said, but maybe you should study a profession, That was something which he couldn't handle. He couldn't even handle the question. And how sad is that? And in Israel, a lot of the wives go to work, but the wives are not necessarily trained to work. I had one student from Williamsburg in the 12, 15 years that I've been teaching at yeshiva. And this girl was sent to yeshiva by her grandparents. The grandparents are modern, sort of what we call modern type of religious, living in Los Angeles. The son became Hasidish, Satmar, and he went to live in Williamsburg. The granddaughter is in my class. And this girl is wonderful. And her husband, she eventually got engaged, got married. Her husband is the luckiest man in Williamsburg because she is trained to, if he wants to study, she went to work in Goldman Sachs. She studied finance. This is a very Hasidish young lady who's working in a very high level, like the judge that they just made in Brooklyn. You know, she must have gone to law school, this lady. She's very put together, the judge that they made a whole thing about a few weeks ago. There are examples in the community. People start saying, well, we're not actively cheating, we're passively cheating. That means, you know, it's not a problem if someone looks over and copies my answer. There is a problem. Lashon Hara, you know, Lashon Hara says not only is the speaker wrong, not only is the person hearing it is wrong, but even the person who it's about is also blamed for giving the opportunity to speak back. So even passive involvement in something like Lashon Hara is considered to be something wrong. So there's no question that passive cheating, if you want to call it that, is no excuse for anybody. It's not an excuse. Why, in the end of the day, should Jewish students not cheat? Because we know that, and this is something which is worrying me intensely, as this administration, whatever one talks about in the current affairs, pro or con, the fact is the fact that there are so many prominent Jews in this administration is, to me, extremely worrying. And the reason is because, in the end of the day, we're here in this world to make what is called Kiddush Hashem, to sanctify God's name. And if we are associated eventually with things which are not Kiddush Hashem, which the country will turn around and say, ah, look, not only was the president doing whatever he did, but his son-in-law was complicit in what he did, which is now part of the discussion we hear on the news. If you listen to NPR, you can hear it every single day. That, in a way, is worrying because people know, at the end of the day, it's well known. This young man comes from a religious family, that Trump's daughter converted in an Orthodox conversion. They were seen in shul, certainly when they lived in New York. Some of the students I have told me they came every Shabbat, and they were there, you know, so that there was a commitment. There's no question about it. But the reality is that once you get into the world of Chilul Hashem, of not making God's name great, but people start looking down at you and start saying and complaining and saying, ah, Jews are so powerful and Jews are so prominent and everything else that we've suffered from through all these years, then we're in trouble. And that is the bottom line. Cheating and honesty, we can't afford Chilul Hashem in this world. The world of communication means that somebody does something terrible in Australia, has happened already a number of times in the Jewish community, and you hear about it in New York within seconds, not within days, not within years, milliseconds. And this is the world we're living in. And then when a school is caught cheating in SATs in New York, this goes right around the world, as it did. It became a New York Times article and various other places. Terribly, terribly disturbing. So the bottom line has to be, and I can't stress this enough, if we give the example to our children and grandchildren of an honest world, of an honest approach, an ehrlich approach, then with God's help, they will say, ah, I remember how honest and how decent my grandparents were, my parents are, and that will have its effect. And it really does have an effect. And there are some incredible, incredible young people doing some incredible, really incredible things. But the reality of it is that with all the pressures and with everything that goes on, I think we just have to be wise about this. We have to understand what the Rambam says. There is this tendency to follow the crowd. There is this tendency sometimes to be negative according to like the people around you. And take the wise words of Rambam. Don't look at the bad guys, look at the good guys. Alright, take what's going on around you and elevate it. Okay, it says in the Ten Commandments, I'll leave you with this thought. It says that the expression is used, right, at the beginning of the Ten Commandments. Hashem b'shamayim mima'al, do not copy the gods which are b'shamayim mima'al, above in heaven, v'asher ba'aretz mitachas, or in the earth below. And this is a phrase which is taken by certain Hasidic writers to give us a way of life. Sheba Shamayim, when it comes to spiritual things, ba mima, look to the person above you. Understand that one can be a bit stronger, one can be a bit more devoted, one can be a bit more connected to God. Sheba Aretz, when it comes to material things, look at people who've got less than you. And when you realize that, you know, you complain, maybe life is hard and whatever, realize, look in the world, and even in our own communities, how many people have got so much less than we have, and that puts everything into perspective. And I think this is the bottom line of what we're saying here. Should cheating be accepted, or even once? Some people say, oh, well, I only did it once. Not really seriously. This is zero tolerance. And I can say, in the praise of where I'm teaching in YU, the message I should bring and show you the document, every single semester, the message is, zero tolerance for cheating. And I think it's not just about the educational lesson, but it's about a life lesson. And please God, those girls that go out into the world and get married and live in nice sort of Jewish communities, they won't be on the front page of whatever magazine or whatever newspaper, you know, in handcuffs being taken away. I can't believe that will happen, because I think the message gets through loud and clear that if you conduct your life in an honest way, then that's all that's expected of you. In fact, on the contrary, that's what people will look up to, people will respect you for it. I made my case. I want to just hear your comments, please.
A friend of mine who was always first in class.
Always Jesus. Wow.
Even told me how he had something about him. But the interesting part is that he also told me that the teacher knew he was cheating. When you come to think, why was the teacher interested in? Because the teacher got better grades.
That's the problem. And that today is a big problem, because teachers are graded by the results of the students. And that, again, is one of the real problems of the educational system. I think that the really good teachers don't think about this because they do a good job. And if they do a good job, the kid's going to do well. At least the kid will do as well as he or she can do. And that becomes the best advert for the teacher. But there are not. There's a whole range of different types of teachers out there. That's a very interesting comment. Thank you. Please, yeah. Oh, that's...
And I was told to forget it.
That's
this kid was allowed to...
Just to run over the teachers. Unacceptable. Absolutely. I mean, it's easy for me to say, but the bottom line is you get out of a school like that, and you certainly do not encourage people to go there, because that school is run on a very dishonest basis. I know it goes on. No, and I would respect that, because if I was in your position, I would look for another school as well. It just, there's no justification. And when it gets found out, and how bad that becomes in the way people look and sort of start stereotyping, because we are the ones that get stereotyped more quicker than anybody else, particularly in the Hasidic world, the look is just so easy to stereotype. And there are some phenomenal people doing incredible things in the religious world, no question about it. But that's not what people are looking for. They're looking for the bad guys. And this story in Lakewood is a work in progress, and I fear the worst. People will say, well, it's only a dozen arrests. There's another dozen arrests coming. They said that they've got 26 other cases open at the moment about it. And again, this, as you would understand, this discussion can go into a much wider field of the way that communities have dealt with issues within the community, but I don't want to go there today. But that's, again, something which is getting better, but needs still a lot of improvement.
If somebody's giving a lot of money to the school, which his family also was doing, they may look the other way.
Yeah.
Or the parents gave a lot of money.
Yeah, and that I can't tolerate it. On the contrary, I think the principal should be strong enough to go to the parent and say, we've got a problem here, let's work it out together. That's a good principle. I must admit, I haven't worked with many principals like that over the years, because their hands are tied by the people with the money, but it does happen occasionally, and I've always respected that sort of leader, but it's hard. Yeah, 20 years ago. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We're doing a presentation on Shabbat. Sorry? And certainly a bit cooler to come here than it was sitting in the Schwitz outside. And definite food for thought. I hope giving you something to take away, think about.
Thank you.
Sorry? I'm here for another 10 days. It's Hashem. Thank you, everybody. Have a good day.